Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Welcome back to the Quick Restart podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Quint Kesnick. Quint, yesterday you tweeted, "The new rules are terrific and give the game back to the players and fans." This weekend, there were 11 one-goal games, five of which were decided in overtime, and there were six games that featured 30 or more goals. Wait, hold on. Yes, that's right, because Notre Dame, Maryland only featured 27. What a dud. Explain to me why this season, this 2019 season, has been so awesome, because it unequivocally has been.
I have no idea. All I know is I thought it was really good, and then miraculously, it got better this weekend. You know, anytime I go to a place to do a game and people see me, who are you rooting for? Who you like? Who, you know, all I root for are compelling playmaking games with action, which usually means goals. So I like goals. Goals are good. That's a one goal game. You know, late in the fourth quarter, the final doesn't have to be a one goal, but to have a one goal game with 5 minutes to go, that's compelling TV. That's what we root for, and we love those. And this weekend, I have never seen anything like it. I mean, you look across the country, Maryland, Notre Dame today, even games under the radar, Brown, UMBC, 14-13. I mean, you know, Jacksonville puts up 19. They win that by a bunch. Detroit Mercy, 15. Bellarmine, 14. Like, there's so many of these games. Sacred Heart, 17. Providence, 16. Cornell Albany, another 17-16 game. Quinnipiac beats New Jersey Tech by two. These are, you know, even the Richmond Duke game, it was a little low scoring because of the rain on Friday night. That game went into the fourth quarter. It was fairly close after Richmond jumped out. So I've never seen anything like it. I don't know why. I think the rules are increasing the action, yes, but I think the players are just better, and the coaches are kind of letting them go.
So it all mounts. It bubbles up. It's got this volcanic activity. You know, the one-goal games, the late contests, all this sort of stuff. That's the magma. And the eruption is, who is going to be number one? By the time you're listening to this, you will probably know. I guess, you know, there's going to be a couple thousand maybe people that listen to this before we know who number one is. But for the most of you are going to be listening to this after we know who number one is. So, Quint, who's going to be number one when the polls come out on the morning of March 4th?
Towson's going to be number one. Absolutely. The Lords of Baltimore, with their win over Loyola on Wednesday night, had the weekend off, which was probably the best thing that could ever happen to them. They've got a win over Johns Hopkins, and they've got a win over Georgetown, and they've got a win over Loyola. They're undefeated. One of only, I believe, three teams now undefeated. Did we lose two this weekend?
Well, we definitely lost VMI. We lost Maryland, yes.
And we lost Delaware.
Lost three.
So we have Ohio State, Towson, and Cornell are the lone undefeateds, I believe, in case I'm missing somebody. I don't think I am. So that I do think Towson will be one. Again, what are the choices here, though, Terry? You tell me. You got Towson, maybe Duke, Denver, Penn State, Yale. Maryland, with a win today, was going to be a lock for the number one spot. Loyola, can you give Loyola a one after they lost to Towson? Cornell at 3-0?
Yeah, I think it's between Cornell and Towson.
Cornell at 3-0 with a razor-thin win over Albany, and giving up all sorts of goals this year. I got them down at 8, quite honestly.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That seems disrespectful.
Why?
Just because...
What have they done? They're not winning face-offs. They're giving up goals by the boatloads. They can score, and I think they'll get better. But I don't see them as the number one team in the country, no way.
By resume, I would say if you're someone who values not losing, which I think most pollsters are, it makes sense that they would be number two behind Towson.
At 3-0?
And Ohio State would be number three.
Beat an Albany team that Cuse beat by 7? Okay. I don't see it.
So let's talk about the games in particular, and let's start in South Bend Sunday afternoon. The number 17, it's hard to believe, but that's where the Fighting Irish were ranked last week. The number 17 Notre Dame Fighting Irish welcomed the number 2 Maryland Terrapins to town. fell behind early and then battled back. It was nip and tuck throughout. Terps put on a late rush to close a two-goal lead and then tie it at 13, send it to overtime where Brian Willits ended the action. Notre Dame heads home, which is a very close walk to their dorms. 14-13 victors over Maryland in overtime. Willits' game winner came on a dive, which, you know,
is it was a good dive. They made the right call.
Yeah, for sure. This was a game that played. Hold on. This was a game played indoors. Awesome broadcast. The tightness of the action definitely was a function of something that the ESPNU crew is trying to do over the course of this season, and I felt like it was really kind of a harbinger of what's to come.
Well, you're forced to shoot it tight in that arena, and you know that you could contrast that to maybe that game was played outdoors today in College Park, in that gigantic stadium where our cameras are up on the sixth floor, and the players look like ants. So it's the perfect scenario that way. But the main storyline for me in this game is Notre Dame Maryland game moved indoors. Ching, 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 ching. Go to Vegas, go to a window and bet the home team. Okay. The data, the historical data for these home teams in these indoor games is gigantic. Okay. Ohio State 23-0. I believe Notre Dame improved today to what? 10-1 all time?
That's right. They were 9-1 coming in.
They were 9-1. Okay. Penn State, I know they've lost a game or two indoors, but I'm guessing their winning percentage is somewhere in the 75-80% range. Okay, it is that's why I'm so impressed with Maryland today. I have more, again, Maryland's loss today to me was more impressive than many of the wins they've put up this year, other than the Navy win. I actually have more respect for Maryland right now than I did last week when we talked, because remember we had this discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I'm more bullish on Maryland right now than I was before the game today.
Well, so let's hone in on that, which is weird. Yeah, it's weird, but let's hone in on that, and then we can talk about the Irish. So, coming away from the win over Navy that I was at, I was really impressed by their short sticks, which is a conversation you and I had midweek, right? The idea is when it comes to championship weekend.
Yeah, I saw the one guy fall on his face today.
Well, yeah. Okay. That being said, coming away from last weekend, that was the thing I honed in on. And you talked about how you zero in on seniors.
Give me
and
good
you
shorties,
zero in on short sticks. And that's what you want to build your team off of. And one of the things that surprises me most about this Maryland team is the diversity of their scoring options, right? So you kind of coming in, I think, assumed it was going to be Bernhardt and then maybe a little bit of Fairman. That was where the team was going to start. But Wisnoskis has proven to be consistently productive. And Lewis Dubik, Kark said it best. The dude knows how to – he's got a mapped – he's got his GPS set to the back of the net. And I think that their midfield depth is going to continue to emerge. DeMeo, whatever. Like Till's teams know how to convert – attackmen into offensive players, and so the distinction between midfielders and attackmen don't matter very much, and you just get a bunch of guys on the field, you know, whether they're two-handed, whether they know how to score, like, they fill their role well, and this is the team that I see when I look at them right now.
I don't disagree with anything you said. I will say this. For the last decade, Maryland's been playing slow-down offensive lacrosse, where you rely heavily on your first midfield. You stack it, your second midfield just out there killing time, and that's been the case with Maryland, okay? Too often early this year, it looks like they're using that same philosophy with these new rules that are going to increase the number of possessions in a game. So you can no longer rely on stacking that first midfield and running those three guys out there all day long, and that's why on Memorial Day, Monday, you're tired, you got no legs, and you can't win a championship. Okay, you need to be deeper than that, and maybe this group can be that group. You know, maybe Will Snyder and DeMeo and Dubik can become, you know, players, because certainly Bernhardt and Fairman and Wisnoskis are a trio as good as any in country. And Wisnoskis, hello, back up on him a second, Terry. He scored 50 points last year. Okay, he was 35-15. It's a 50-point guy who somehow has snuck under the national radar.
Which is weird for someone who's like 6'6", 230 pounds.
Yeah, he makes it look too easy, maybe for his own good. Like he catches the ball on the wing and scores. It's like, hey, there's the big guy slinging the ball. Wow,
play on the end line to keep the ball in bounds, is that the best non-goal scoring play you've seen so far this year?
No.
Okay. Well, it was pretty cool though, right?
Tyler Canto's save was better than that.
True. Very good point. So shifting to the other end of the bench or other sideline, I don't know. Hard to kind of make that distinction in this sport, where both teams stand on the same sideline. Notre Dame, they put up 14 on Maryland. It seems as if the natural inclination would be to say this game, this result was about Notre Dame finding their offensive identity after they were limited to 8 goals at Richmond. What say you?
This game indicates that Notre Dame should move all their home games from Arlotta into Loftus.
So you don't find it more significant than that?
You got to prove it to me.
Or you're just going to play it slowly?
Because, you know, you go back last year, there were times where they scored goals when Gleason was in the lineup, and then he disappeared, remember, and they scored 6-2, and, you know, they weren't the same team without him. So I thought he was terrific today. Costabile draws such a crowd that others can play. You know, others are going to be able to score. Gleason's a star. Willits, you know, you ignore Wisnowskis, his 50 points last year. You know how many points Brian Willits had last year with a lot of playing time? He only had 14 goals and 3 assists last year. So, you know, this is still new territory for him to be a consistent, you know, contributor. Connor Morin, another sophomore, Under Armour guy. Go up and down the lineup, Terry. They're all Under Armour defenders and midfielders, like every single one of them. These guys are studs.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question is Notre Dame a first-round NCAA tournament team? Are they a quarterfinalist, or are they a Final Four
team? I don't know.
And
To me, they're a quarterfinalist just almost by their brand name and who they are defensively. Now, did you think that the shot clock rules play in the favor of their defense? That's been the whispers all year long. Did you think that took place today?
No, I don't. I felt like...
No.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that they got stops because of the shot clock. I felt like they were actually better earlier in the clock. You know, particularly, they're really good at disrupting Maryland's attempts in unsettled offense, I thought, in the first half especially. So that was kind of where I thought that this is a team that's better playing in chaos than they are trying to, like, ramp down or clamp down late in the shot clock.
Yeah, no, I think that was, propaganda coming from Notre Dame folks to defend the fact that they've been holding the ball for the last decade.
All right, Quint, let's move along. There was another big ACC contest. It was the first ACC game of the year. The Virginia Cavaliers went to the Carrier Dome and took on the Syracuse Orange in a series that has been decided by one game and one goal. And appropriately, that game and that goal went to the Virginia Cavaliers this time, and it tied up both the win-loss record and the all-time goal-scoring record in this series. Mikey Herring putting in the OT game winner. It gave the Cavaliers a 15-14 victory over the number 12 Orange. I cannot believe that Syracuse lost this game.
Well, this was a great game. I mean, this is one game where, you know, there's nice build-up in town. You get to the Dome, and we watch Virginia practice on Friday night. There's just excitement in the air. And you kind of say to yourself, well, maybe this is the year this game's not that good. Well, this game always delivers. I mean, it's like the rivalry that never disappoints. And this game it wasn't a perfectly played game, but it was action-packed every quarter. There wasn't a lull. When I look at my score sheet, like there wasn't a 6-minute, you know, without a goal, a 10-minute scoreless streak. It was like nonstop action, frenetic. Relentless was the word I used to describe Virginia's comeback because they were gritty and relentless. This game had incredible pace. You know, how did you lose it if you're Syracuse? You're up 13-9. Virginia makes a run with Dox Akin and Kraus and Conrad. Voigt scores the shorthanded goal, 14-12. I'm thinking game over. You gave him the chance, but then you answered. All Cuse needed was one more possession because 80 seconds, Terry, is a long time. Like if there's 2 minutes to go in a game, you're up by 2 goals, just use the 80, roll it into the corner, game over. All you got to do is stop him once. Cuse never got that opportunity. And I give Michael Kraus a ton of credit. I thought Syracuse mismanaged that matchup. When you go back and look at the tape, who's on him? He's being covered by a shorty. He's being covered by Cunningham. He should be covered by Nick Mellon every possession for that whole game. And I don't know what happened with Syracuse's defense, but Kraus took that game over.
So one of the things that's hard to overlook if you're a Syracuse fan, it was a game with a lot of penalties. There were 10 called against the Orange. 11. In fact, the last 5 were called against Syracuse in the last 15:03 of regulation, and then one penalty in overtime as well. Virginia only scored one man up goal. So my question for you is, in that last stretch, my question for you is
more from Kraus, the 11th goal.
Yeah. What, if you were a Syracuse fan, would you be blaming the refs for this loss?
I got a text less than a half hour ago from a Syracuse fan who was asking me to do the research. When was the last time a home team got 10 penalties? He goes, you know, this mystique about the dome gods and getting the calls in the dome is not true. And my response to him was, don't foul, because I can't argue with any of the calls other than the Bomberry push I didn't agree with. But other than that, you had to make the calls. And one that stands out to me in particular was Nicky Solomon, who's caught playing midfield. Ryan Conrad comes down, and Solomon engages him at like the 30-yard line. And it's almost like they have this personal duel, this vendetta. These two guys go at it, and Solomon eventually gets a holding call. For what? What was to gain on that play by going out and playing Ryan Conrad at the 30-yard line? That to me was undisciplined, and that cost your team. You know, it just I don't want to say boneheaded, but I thought many of their penalties were effort penalties that are just going to happen because the ground ball scraps in this game were incredible. But, you know, 10 fouls is 10 fouls. I thought the refs were incorrect on the Bomberry penalty. Otherwise, I could not argue with the penalties.
Who impressed you from the Virginia standpoint?
Well, the known commodities, you know, I like Laviano. The more tape I watch on him inside, he's a really good inside player. He moves so well. And Aiken, I thought Moore was a little disappointing on that right wing. I'm still not sure if he's comfortable, Matt Moore, in that role now. Xander Dixon came off the bench. He was good. I thought Ryan Conrad late in that game, in terms of getting ground balls off the wings of faceoffs, was unbelievable. I thought Cade Sostad, their young freshman defender, played his best game of the year by far in his angle play. You know what? We didn't notice him off the ball, but he was pretty good. Kyle Kaloji in the first half shut down Voigt, and we didn't hear Voigt's name at all. And then eventually things loosened up, and Voigt ended up with three, I believe, or two. One was in transition, but so he did a good job as well. I was kind of impressed with Virginia shorties, believe it or not, guys I'd never heard of. Matt Jama, 14, a senior. Looks like an incredible athlete. Grayson Soliday is only a freshman. He's going to be a nice player. You know, John Fox didn't have a strong game because he had that turnover that led to the goal, and Corey Harris played okay. So Virginia shorties and then Cuse's shorties. Man, that's the best-looking group of shorties I think Syracuse has had in a long time. Peter Dirth, you know, he's only a junior, but he's a pro. Helmer's playing shorty and pole. Grant Murphy's playing shorty and pole. Those guys make this defense better. I just thought, as I said earlier, I thought they mismanaged the Mellon-Kraus matchup because Kennedy basically held Doc Aiken in check. I mean, Aiken had his points, but it wasn't like he was dominating.
You mentioned Matt Moore's struggles. I found it interesting that Jacob Buttermore, his high school teammate at Garnet Valley, definitely not as highly touted as the number one recruit in the class that Moore was, put up three goals. That wasn't really interesting showing for sure.
Well, he finished last year on a high note, had three against Colgate. Coming into this game, he had scored against Albany from 17 yards. He'd scored on a rebound against Army. He had a nice roll back to his right and scored a goal, I believe, against Army as well. So he's playing with confidence, and you could see it right away. Dodging against a shorty, invert, unassisted, left-handed, great shot to the upper corner, and then a step down from 15 from Rafis. He did disappear a little in the fourth quarter after scoring unassisted to make it 9-7. He wasn't on the line that Coach Desco put in out there out of a lot of dead balls. It was more the veterans of Lipka, Curry, and Trimboli.
And Steven Rafis got on the board for the first time all year.
Yeah, I still think Cuse is missing just one impactful attackman. You know, I like Solomon. I think Voigt's got a good role. And Rafis is a nice player. He's been fighting the flu. So, you know, get off his back in terms of the shooting percentage. I think they have a stable of pretty good midfielders. I just think, obviously, there's no number 22 down there. You know, this is a game they probably win with Tucker Dordovic. You know, I hate to say it. You know, the what ifs, Terry. I had a what if with my daughter. You know, what if this happened? I would have had a higher. What if? We don't deal with what ifs. I can give you 100 what ifs. What if Tucker Dordovic was playing for Syracuse? What would their record be? What if, Terry, we took every one goal result in the country and flipped it. What would the standings look like tomorrow? I want you to do me a rankings and flip all the one goal wins and losses tomorrow. That'd be fun.
If I have time, probably don't, I will do that. And the last what if Muggy Herring's first goal of the season came at any other point than an overtime in a win over Syracuse? That's a really significant number in my book.
I liked Virginia's spirit of practice on Friday. You know, Dave Smith, a senior from Shawnee High School in New Jersey, who actually scored more points than Chris LaPierre did. He's a short stick defensive midfielder, but he gave this long speech after practice, the last word, and that was coming from the Starzy era. This was the first time it was done with Lars Tiffany, because Smith, a senior, was recruited by Dom, and Lars said, okay, go ahead with it. It was a great speech, and I learned so much about their culture and what it's like to be in college nowadays, and just by listening, Cotter and I were able to great access, and they got a good team. I mean, these are good players. Kraus, Aiken, Conrad, Laviano, that's a strong four. Moore is going to find his role. Sostad's an animal. Logan Greco looks like he's 35 years old. I mean, he's been out there forever. Connors is a good athlete. So this team needed to show me toughness. They did. They showed me toughness. Everyone says this Virginia team is pretty good, but they're not. Well, they showed me toughness. They showed me grit and resiliency and relentlessness. I think this is as big a step as last year when they won that game in the ACCs.
That being said, I'm very interested by what this means for the Orange, so let's go ahead and hear from Syracuse head coach John Dusko.
Well, it turned out to be a typical Syracuse-UVA game. One point again. And obviously not happy with the loss here in the Carrier Dome. I thought both teams played extremely hard. And they had a little bit more offense than we did going down the stretch. So disappointed in that. We would like to have got that one today, but we didn't. Now we've got to roll up our sleeves and get back to work next week, because we've got the Blue Jays coming in a week from today. We have a hard time finding the back of the net there. I think that they did a pretty good job sliding. We didn't do a great job on their, they call them big littles, where they invert a mini behind the cage defensively, and then face-offs. You know, they got more face-offs than we did in the game, which, you know, Jake was a little banged up. So we went back to Danny, and Danny got a few out, but they got a few that gave them some big possessions in the game.
What did you see on the final play of the game? It looks like it's a good play by them, trying to shoot over the top.
We were trying not to switch. They had a midi behind the cage, inverting one of our short sticks, and set a pick. And we weren't supposed to switch, but I think we had some miscommunication. The defenseman didn't think that the shorty could get through, so we did switch. And as a result, we had two guys on one offensive player and left the other one wide open on the corner.
All right, Quint. It's very difficult to decide which is the third game we're going to talk about. So I'm going to lay out five or six games whose results, final scores, caught my attention. And then you can react as you will. Denver 12, North Carolina 10 from the new former Fetzer Field. Johns Hopkins 14, Princeton 12, High Point 16, Robert Morris 15 in double overtime. Penn State 15, Penn 14, Yale 12, UMass 11 in overtime. Cornell 17, Albany 16. Tell me about the world that was in college lacrosse.
I don't know where to start. Denver, rise and shine, baby. 10 a.m. face-off, that's 8 a.m. for the Mountain Timers. Okay, the Denver athletes, their body clock said it was 8 a.m. So I expected a slow start. I didn't expect them to give up 10 to the Tar Heels, but good to see that new facility is up and running.
The best facility in college lacrosse. I haven't been there, but it looked amazing.
It's going to look amazing. It'll help if some of the students from North Carolina would show up for some games every now and then.
Speaking of which, 30, what do we got here? 3,860 fans at the Carrier Dome for Virginia. This was a game that got almost 20,000 in 2009, 10, 11, somewhere in that range, 2009, 2011. Come on, Syracuse, do better.
Honestly, the vibe up there was pretty good once the game started. I do think that there are some that are so accustomed to being top four every year, you know. Too many Central New York recruits or Upper State New York recruits got away, and what would Syracuse's banners on the roof of the dome look like had Lyle Thompson or Connor Fields decided to play for the Orange?
It's a big question. We'll probably do an off-season podcast about it. But back to the results at hand.
All right, back to Penn. Was Penn 0-3? Penn's 0-3.
It's crazy.
They're like the greatest 0-3 team in the history of lacrosse. They put up 46 shots, but Penn State dug in. That was the first home game in their new stadium as well. One that I think is going to be fun to play in with that hill.
Interesting. Okay. I didn't get a chance to see that.
I think it's going to be pretty cool. Yale, a little bit of a disappointment. Again, you know, TD had to win a ton of the last faceoffs in that ball game. UMass had a nice lead. Yale came back. Jackson Morrow played well. The attack looked like they played well. You know, Morrow, Rooney, and Gaudette scored the game winner in overtime. But that's three straight one-goal games for the defending champs. And, you know, Andy Shea, so this is new territory for this group, okay? This is absolutely new territory for everybody in that locker room. And it doesn't look like they're handling it. Now, maybe this was, you know, hey, let's move on. Maybe they can become themselves. They got to start playing better defense. On a possession-based model, their defense is not doing well at all.
I would tend to agree. I also thought that it was interesting they ran up against a hot goalie in Sean Scannone, who put up 14 stops and let in 12. You know, he hasn't played up to par, but he was my first team All-American goalie heading into the season. And UMass now 1-3. You talk about Penn being the best 0-3 team. You know, this Minutemen squad is looking at a much improved CAA with Delaware at 4-1, Towson 4-0. They're going to have to make some hay, and it's not going to be as easy as you might have expected coming off of last season.
I agree. Let's turn our attention to Loyola Holy Cross, because Loyola coming off the Wednesday loss to Towson, one where their defense was a bit exposed. You know, they gave up too many quality scoring chances when they played man-to-man, and they went to zone. It was effective for a while. But I expected a strong defensive performance against Holy Cross, and the Crusaders scored 16 times. What is that about, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely fell apart in the middle of the game. And I thought that, number one, you know, so series they tilt one direction or the other. And dating back to, I believe, the 2015 game? No, I guess it would have been 2014? I don't know. Yeah, no, it was 2015. This game was played in a tremendous snowstorm. And Holy Cross beat Loyola in that game. You know, this series is actually, even though the results haven't necessarily favored the Crusaders to the degree that they can claim victory in this.
Good point.
Relative to the two teams, you know, their program history, Holy Cross has represented themselves better in this game than you might otherwise expect. And Charlie Toomey said post-game something that he said pre-game, which was that this is going to be their toughest week of the season, you know, between obviously the end of their really tough four-game stretch to open the season, in which they, you know, lost their midweek game against Towson, their first Patriot League game, and then the five-day turnaround to head to Durham and take on Duke. You know, it's a tall task. And so, ultimately, this, for me, is one of those games where I'm like, you just need the W. Just figure out a way to get out of here.
No, I agree with you. I had penciled that in, which now you bring up the history, and that snow game is unforgettable. You're right. And this is a tough week. What gives you any hope that Loyola can stay with Duke on Thursday in a game I'm televising on ESPNU, 7 o'clock with Anish and Paul? I just worry about Loyola's defense against Duke's athletes.
Okay, so before we get into the tactics of this game and the kind of breakdowns of the matchup, first of all, shout out to ESPNU, who, as I already have praised coming off of this really interesting indoor game against Notre Dame in which Michael Oak Jr. was on the call, is now finding themselves in one of the things that I think is the best and coolest opportunity for all of college lacrosse, which is Thursday night lacrosse. It's going to be awesome. And this is a matchup that I think is probably the most underrated series in college lacrosse, dating back to 2006.
Yeah, which great
Loyola
series.
Beat the Blue Devils in San Diego. Very infamous game for a lot of different reasons. They lost that one and then they won in 2007. But the point being that there have been some really crazy, interesting, and meaningful results in this series, and I think this is going to be another one.
You know, the playoff game when Loyola went down to Duke and lost in overtime,
the
correct?
Timeout game.
Yeah, the timeout game. And when Big Runk, after giving up that goal, fell on his face.
Yep.
Like that shot was just ripped my heart out as a goalie. Thinking about it, that is one of the most memorable video shots I can remember from one of our games, where a cameraman caught a player when a game went final. And if you're just tuning in, you're like, oh my gosh, the kid's devastated. It's like, wow, this means a lot. Like that was a great game. Great game.
That was a great game. At the other end of the spectrum, the 2016 first round game, in which, you know, the Miles Jones component, and Loyola just eviscerated them. It wasn't a great game by any stretch, but it was like a expression of both Pat Spencer's arrival and, you know, how momentum and a team can come together and really just catch everything about lightning in a bottle. You know, there's a lot of games in the history of this series that have strong memories for sure. And I'm with you in the sense that Loyola is going to struggle to beat teams in the middle of the field. Ryan McNulty is probably the only athletic advantage that they're going to have at either end of, you know, kind of the top of the box. But the question that I have is, now we've got a two-game sample of Pat Spencer not winning the game himself, both the Towson and the Holy Cross game, right? So, you know, I think that the factors that dealt the Loyola game in their favor against Holy Cross were Scanlon and Lindley. And so my question is, if Kate Van Raphorst is the guy that you decide to put on Spencer, which I actually don't think they'll do, I think they'll try to use, because he's so good off ball, I think they're going to try to put Giles Harris on Spencer and prevent
him
from running around.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it's, yeah, I don't know. All right, so go on. Let me hear your thoughts.
Well, no, I agree. I think JT Giles Harris gets that matchup. Cade Van Raphorst has been spending a lot of times on the wings of faceoffs. He's, you know, he was really critical in that that muddy win, that Manown goal on the botched pass, a couple weeks ago. So I see JT Giles Harris taking that matchup. You know, again, with Spencer had 8 assists the other day, didn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, he had 3
yeah.
and 8.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you say you're right.
I'm sorry.
He was 3
and
8.
Right. Okay.
He was 3 and 8, okay? And Lindley had 6 goals, Scanlon 7 points. Duffy's still shooting it a little cold. And then nothing coming from the bench. They only got 3 points from the bench out of 34. Okay, and that's a theme that I brought up on this podcast over and over again this year. Loyola's depth of scoring is not great. They're top 6 on offense, maybe the best in the country. Absolutely. If they trade possessions evenly, they probably are going to beat every team in the country. Maybe Penn State would give them a game. But again, faceoffs, turnovers, lack of midfield defense, is I think it's an issue for Charlie.
All right, Quint. The last one we got to hear from you on, you have been notably absent in your commentary on the Blue Jays win, 14-12 over the Princeton Tigers.
Oh, gigantic. No. The Jays are getting better. They really are. I enjoyed watching highlights of the Mud game from Carolina last week. Just classic shots of these never-ending ground balls. And now they got 2 wins in a row, 14-12 over Princeton. A nice run. Again, you know, they're dealing with as what they couldn't do against Towson was deal with a punch. Well, as it turns out, Towson was a really good team. As it turns out, the loss to Loyola is a really good team. So those on the ledge – step back in here and let this team develop. You know, Brett Baskin, good day. And for the second week in a row, Hopkins is getting goals from, non-stars. Their attacker, their leading scorers, but then, like, you know, Kuhn scoring, Colwell scoring, Tate Katoni scoring, Baskin. You know, it's a little bit here, a little
Evan
bit there.
Evan Zinn got one.
Zinn scored his first goal. I love it when guys score their first goals, by the way. Xander Dixon, shout out to Virginia for his first goal. know, that's a great moment that they'll never forget, like their whole lives. So congratulations, Evan.
So that kind of brings us to the end of this first weekend in March.
That's the end. We could go on for 3 hours.
We literally could. You're not wrong, but at the same time.
BU Terriers are on a run. We're going to find out about Rutgers in the next couple weeks. Princeton's put himself in a corner. Michigan's, you know, hovering around the 20 spot. This is fascinating. Georgetown has a tough week.
Cleveland State and Utah are competing for the fourth seed in the SoCon tournament.
Utah. Like Brian Holman's like on my short list of coach of the years right now. He and John Torpy. It's crazy.
It's been a great, I mean, it really has. It's been, we're 1 month into the college season and, you know, we do this for the fans. We do this for the 73 Division I teams, but I think a lot of credit goes in, and we would be remiss not to tip our caps to the players and the coaches for all the work they did to pride us with such competitive action. It's been awesome.
The quality of play is off the charts. Like what I'm seeing from players, the dodging, passing, shooting, the athleticism on the grounders, the hitting, the creativity now is a great, great game. This was everything you hoped the game could be, and it's there, and we're doing it. So tell a friend, bring a friend to a game. You know, check out some of these incredible highlights that I'm seeing on social media of these kind of goals and hits and wacky plays, and it's just so entertaining.
Well, that'll do it for this edition of the Quick Restart Podcast. As always, if you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. Hit us up on social media. I'm at Terrence Foy. He is at Q Kesnick. We are at @inside_lacrosse. We're at Inside Lacrosse on Instagram. And as Quinn said, tell a friend, and we'll be back next week.
See you Thursday night, 7 o'clock, ESPNU. Loyola at Duke.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3, poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.